Welcome to Shir Rabbeinu B'chaim, Parsha Shmini. The Rabbeinu B'chaim, in his pre-Parsha Mishlei introduction, we noted many times, that Rabbeinu B'chaim is very fond of Sefer Mishlei, and he opens up every Sedra with a citation from Mishlei, and relating the Pasuk in Mishlei in some way to the Parshas HaShavua. So here, he quotes the Pasuk from Mishlei Perek Tes, the beginning of Perek Tes in Mishlei, Chachmas Bamsa Besa, Chatzwa Amudeh HaShiva. Wisdom has built its house, it has hewn out its pillars as being seven. Right? There are seven pillars of wisdom. What exactly is meant by the seven pillars of wisdom? So, Rabbeinu B'chaim first says at length, you know, seven is just it's a number. You know, don't get so caught up in the fact that the pasuk identifies the amudim of the pillars of wisdom as being seven. Seven is the number that we like to use. He says, for instance, you know, the other pasuk in Mishlei, Sheva Yipol Tzadik Bekom, that the tzadik falls seven times and yet gets himself up. So, you know, that doesn't mean that the tzaddik necessarily falls seven times. Seven is a number that conveys a lot. You know, so wisdom has many pillars, you know, seven pillars of wisdom. That's what he says initially. He says that's the Pashat of Pshat. However, if you look towards the end of that piece, in the Shevel edition, it's Tuf Mem Beis, four lines from the bottom of the page, Uva Medrash, he quotes a Medrash, that Chachmas Bamsa Besa, right, that wisdom has built its house. Zos haTorah shebamsa kol haolamos. This refers to Torah. That Torah is the builder, the architect of all of the worlds. And chasva amudeha shiva. What does it mean that wisdom has hewed out seven pillars? Shenechsava mishiva rikiyim. The world itself, the universe, has seven different rungs of heaven. Zacha adam is asik bosh nochal shiva arachsos. If a person is zocha and has involved himself in Torah study, he merits to inherit seven different lands. V'vlav mistalik mishiva arachsos. Right, and if not, if he doesn't learn Torah properly, so he's going to leave the seven lands. Beer. What does that mean? Shiva arachsos haolam hazeh. Right, this world is referred to as the shiva arachsos, the seven lands. So shunechlach l'sheva aklimim, the world in their conception was divided up into seven different climates, and there were seven different zones in the world. It's interesting, right? So I don't think he means continents, because again, they didn't even know about North America and South America, you know. But it is interesting how even our more modern conception of the world still divides the world up into seven different regions, you know, because we do have this notion of seven continents. Again, I don't think he had a notion of seven continents. They divided the world that they knew at the time up into seven different climates, seven different regions. But seven arachsos refers to this world. Uki'ilu amro nochel ha'olam hazeh. And, you know, when it talks about a person who learns Torah will be zocha to the seven pillars, it means that you'll live in olam hazeh, mistalik min olam haba. And if a person, you know, fails to learn Torah, so he'll be kicked out of olam haba, of the next world. Hamerish hazeh also cheshvan shiva davka. Lefishu ha-cheshvan ha-mechuvan ha-kolel el-yonun ha-shvalin. Hu cheshvan ha-nimsa b'harmei mitzvah shiva Torah. So, as opposed to what I said before, says Rabbeinu B'chaye, where I said that the pasuk that speaks about the seven pillars of wisdom is using the term seven, or the number seven, in a kind of inexact way. You know, we don't have to say that wisdom has davka seven pillars. This medrash takes the number seven as being very precise. And this medrash identifies the number seven as being a number which is associated with the world, both the world in which we live, as well as the next world, the world, you know, the world to come, that has this notion of the Sheva Rikiyam, you know, the seven heavens that are associated with it.
Does the Sheva Rikiyam correspond to the thing supposed to be seven?
Sheva Madura Gehenim. Right. So in other words, you know, all these different things, you know, there's seven parts to this and seven parts to that. You know, the number seven is used.
No, but does the Lukiyas correspond to anything in Olam Haba?
Yeah, I think so. But these, you know, so in other words, there are seven aspects to different, you know, dimensions of our existence. The truth is, if you look into many mitzvahs, the number seven is a recurring number when it comes to mitzvah. Right? K'mitzvahs ha-Shabbos. I'm going to take Shabbos. Shabbos obviously is all about the number seven. Va-Shmito, va-Yovel. Shmito, Yovel. Ha-Shvi mekudesh b'yomesh va-Shabbos v'shar v'hi ha-Shmito. V'Shmito, shir-Yovel. Right? The seventh day is Shabbos. The seventh year is Shmito. The seventh Shmito is followed by a Yovel. So we see the idea of seven is prominent over there. Gam Yemei HaPesach Shiva, Yemei HaSukkah Shiva. Pesach and Sukkot also have 7 days. V'arba minim shiva lulav chazrim l'shiva. And if you count up the number of items in a lulav and esrog, there are also seven items. I mean, we talk about the dalet minim, but if you think about it, it's one lulav, one esrog, three hadasim, two aravos. That's seven, right? That number is also not by accident. Kami mehavelu shiva, kimi asimcha, right? We celebrate a chasana for 7 days. We mourn the loss of a relative for 8 days. Vakol inyan echad, yirmos l'shivas yimei breishis, and all of this goes back to the 7 days of creation, right? In other words, 6 days of proactive creation and 1 day of Shabbos, which is part of the shivas yimei breishis as well. Gam Bilam hikriv b'shiva mizbechos, right? Bilam, when he wanted to curse the Jewish people, he was sure to use 7 different altars. Gam yimei amiluim shiva, right? The Kohanim prepared for 7 days to be able to step into their roles as Kohanim, the days of miluim. V'chol advarim ho'eila hasavim al shivam ikaram v'shar shem makom echad. The fact that 7 is such a recurring number in all aspects of Torah is because 7 is a cycle which seems built in to the very fabric of the universe. I'm not sure which is the chicken and which is the egg, but again, clearly the fact that the world is created over a 7-day period sets the tone for the idea that, you know, 7 is a number which implies completeness. You know, as much as 10 is a number which also implies completeness in different ways. When we want to talk about a cycle finishes after 7 units. That is a certain concept which we see over and over again in Torah and its various different mitzvahs. Now, once we've explained all of that and we've said that, you know, Chachmas Chasvah Yesodeha Shiva, right? That, you know, that according to this, when Mishlei talks about how wisdom, you know, has 7 pillars, it's basically saying that the number 7 is a fundamental number for existence in general. So then the follow-up question is, wait a minute, our parsha is Shmini, right, the 8th. And Aaron and his sons assume their positions not on the 7th day, which you would think would be the completion of the cycle, but they assume their positions on the 8th day. The 8th day, the beginning of our parsha, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's the day on which the Mishkan is dedicated. It's the day on which Aaron and his sons step into their respective roles. It's a special day. So why wasn't it on the 7th day? Why is it on the 8th day? So he says as follows. Mashlo mischanich Aaron b'kahuna gedolo b'yom hashvi atzma. The fact that Aaron was not, you know, initiated into the kahuna gedolo on the 7th day of the miluim, instead he waited till the 8th day. Kim l'machroso b'yom hashmini. Because the Kohen Gadol is unique in the Beis HaMikdash to serve the one God, and 8 is something we count after 7. So therefore it's on the level of 1. Al kein siba kosov lios chilas kunaso shel Aaron HaKohen. And it's for that reason that the Torah commands that the Aaron HaKohen should begin his kahuna and step into his role davka on the 8th day. what does that mean? Right? I mean, he just posed the question, you know, so if seven is the complete cycle, so you would think that at the end of the cycle, right? In other words, on the last day of the cycle, the apex of the cycle, that's where Aaron HaKohen would step into his role. You know, so why on the eighth day? What did he say over here exactly? So I think what he's saying is as follows, that seven is the cycle. Eight is when we begin anew, right? And this eight is significant because it's the beginning of the new cycle, right? It's the one. In other words, if a cycle ends at seven, day eight is really day one of the new cycle. And being that Aaron HaKohen is unique, in other words, there's only one Kohen Gadol, and there's only one Beis HaMikdash, and there's only one God, ultimately, who's being served in that Beis HaMikdash, we want to associate the chinuch of Aaron HaKohen and his sons, as Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, we want that to happen on a day which is associated with oneness, and not with any, you know, plurality, not with any number that is different than one, right? So day eight is really day one. That's what he means to say, that hinehu b'maylos ha'echad, right? Day eight is really day one, because if a cycle finishes on day seven, so then day eight is already the beginning of the next cycle. It's day one. All right, so he asked me a question. So Aaron HaKohen should have been initiated already as Kohen Gadol on day one. No, but he can't do that because you need a process, right? There has to be some process of kedusha, you know, through which Aaron and his Kohen and his sons are initiated into the avodah. So there has to be a certain process. He can't just walk in the first day and slap, you know, be sent, you know, to be Kohen Gadol. So he has to go through a cycle, a complete cycle of preparation. That's called 7 days. But the minute we go back to day one, the minute the clock resets and day eight is day one, that's the perfect time to inaugurate this one Kohen Gadol for this one Mishkan to serve the one God. I think that's the point that he's making over here. Right. So the idea of Shmini Atzeres, although he doesn't draw the parallel over here, would seem to fit in with this beautifully. In other words, Shmini Atzeres is all about the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. Right? Atzarti Yischem Etzli, Par Echad, right? If there's only one Par, there's only one Ayil. In other words, the Karbonos are all oneness, right? I is the eighth day, yeah, but eight is really one. Because eight means, you know, the beginning of the new cycle, you know, something which is unique. So Shmini Atzeres has that same, characterization about it. And hence, you know, one can understand even better how Shmini Atzeres is about the unique relationship between God and the Jewish people, you know, as opposed to his relationship with mankind as a whole. Yeah.
Oh, okay, what I wanted to say before I'll answer that.
Okay.
And I just wanted to know what Milui is.
What?
Milui.
Milui means the period of inauguration. Ah. That was the 7 days during which they were getting ready, you know, to become Kohanim in the Mishkan. Right? So that's one pshat that the Rabbeinu B'chai says over here. Why was the chinuch of Aaron HaKohen and the Mishkan on the eighth day? Because eight equals one. You know, eight is really, you know, the beginning of the new cycle. I want to contrast this for a moment with a very famous idea, which I think the origins of this idea is the Maharal. The Maharal certainly says it. I think he is the first one to say it, if I'm not mistaken. But the Maharal writes that seven represents Teva, seven represents the natural world, and eight is Me'al Teva. Eight represents that which is supernatural, that which goes beyond the world. Right? And hence, you know, so the Mishkan, you know, by rights was dedicated on the eighth day, because the Mishkan represents a kind of supernatural existence. It's a place where God, so to speak, comes down to here on earth, where there are all kinds of supernatural miracles taking place. And, you know, from that perspective, the Yom HaShmini being the day on which the Chanukah HaMishkan takes place makes perfect sense, not because it's one, but because it's eight. Right, and for that perspective as well, Milo by Yom HaShmini, you know, the notion that the bris takes place on the eighth day, is that the person, you know, in this world should have a little otherworldliness about him, you know, something that goes Me'al HaTeva and the like. That's a beautiful, a very famous pshat from the Maharal. I think it's clear that the Rabbeinu B'chai looks at things very, very differently. This pshat is not the pshat of Rabbeinu B'chai. In Rabbeinu B'chai's conception, eight is one. You know, according to the Maharal, eight is eight. You know, according to the Rabbeinu B'chai, eight is one. You know, the whole specialness of eight is that it goes back, you know, davka to the beginning. According to the Rabbeinu B'chaye, one might suggest the significance of the Bris Milah taking place on the eighth day is that, you know, after, again, like the Kohanim, once the baby has gone through a preparatory process of Kedusha, and again, one thing that will always happen in a 7-day period is that at least part of a Shabbos is going to, you know, impact upon the child. The child is going to live through at least part of a Shabbos. And he may not have lived through an entire Shabbos from beginning to end by the time the Bris happens, but he will have lived at least through part of the Shabbos by the time the Bris happens, so he's been exposed to that Kedusha. So once he's gone through that cycle, the eighth day is the beginning of the new cycle. So the idea of the Milah taking place on the eighth day is once he's had an opportunity to go through a cycle once, now let's happen at the beginning of his second week of life, his second cycle of life, and take it from Yad, you know, before anything else, let's give him this Bris Milah to bring him in to a state of Kedusha. So the whole idea of Milah Vayom HaShmini is to emphasize the immediacy of it, you know. We would have done it the minute he came out, except that we wanted to give him a week, you know, to be suffused with the Kedusha of Shabbos. So, but now that he got that, you know, now take it from Yad. The first day of his new of his second cycle of life, we want to give him a Bris Milah right away. Right. I'm sure he has a chaff, I just don't know what it is. But you know, it could be that, you know, Vayom HaShmini, you know, the calf as well is ready for an otherworldly existence, you know, as a carbon, you know. So I don't know. Maybe that's. I don't know. I have to take a look. I mean, I'm sure he addresses it.
Does Maral correspond the eighth day in terms of, you know, the eighth day being otherworldliness to the Mishkan?
I think he does. I think he brings it into the Vayom HaShmini. Now that's one pshat that the Rabbeinu B'chaye says. He then goes on to say a second pshat. Right? He goes on to start talking about the first pasuk, which is the, you know, the opening pasuk of the Sedra. Chinuch kahuna gadol b'yom HaShmini kola otam acher. There's another reason why it made sense for the Kohen Gadol to be initiated davka on the eighth day. As much as so many other things in the natural world and in Judaism concern themselves with the number 7, when it comes to Inyanei HaMikdash VeHaMishkan, the number 8 seems to be a very prominent number. So, Sharei Big Dei Kohen Gadol Hayu Shmona. So, for instance, the Kohen Gadol wears 8 Begadim. Bosme Shemen HaMishcha, I think it's a misprint over here. The spices of the Shemen HaMishcha Aktaris Hayugam King Shmona. Right? There were 8 different spices in the Shemen HaMishcha and the Aktaris. It goes on to list them. Habadim Hayushmona. There were eight poles that were used to carry the Kalim, Shnei Badi Ha'ara, Shnei Mashocha, Shnei Lizbrachas Av, Shnei Lizbrach Ha'olah. Gama Karbona, Shnei Makriv, Lahuchshuli Karev, Kimacha Shmona Yomim. It's only after 8 days that you can take an animal to be a carbon. There were 8 different types of, you know, musical scores that the Levim used in singing the songs that they did in the Mishkan. And he goes on to quote from Tehillim, 8 different types of musical instruments that are referenced by David HaMelech in the playing of certain types of Tehillim. I'll say al Negidos, al Machlos, al Alomos, al Maso, al Nechilos, Shoshanim, Gitir, Shminis. Right? In other words, this number 8 is associated with the various different types of Karbonos, or with the various, you know, the various different aspects of the Mishkan and the Mikdash that are tied into the number 8. So, whereas for the world in general, 7 is a number which is significant, whenever we come to deal with the Mikdash or the Mishkan, 8 is a number which becomes very significant. Now, he doesn't explain why. Right? Now, again, I think The first pshat for sure is not what the Rabbeinu is not what the Maral suggested. You know that that seven is teva and eight is me'ala teva. That for sure is not in the first pshat. In the second pshat, so you could explain it that way. In other words, you know, you could explain that, well, why is it that the natural world, you know, is very focused on the number seven, whereas the Mikdash and the Mishkan is very focused on the number eight? Well, that's because the Mishkan and the Mikdash is Me'ala Teva, right? It could fit into the Maral, but I think it's reading an awful lot into the Rabbeinu Bachaye to assume that. You know, I mean, he doesn't make any reference to that. His idea just seems to be very, very simply that you know, that the Mishkan and the Mikdash have this association with the number eight, right? You know what the idea is behind it. He doesn't really talk about over here. One thing which is interesting though is, you know, to take this idea from the Rabbeinu Bechaye and relate it to the notion of Chanukah, right? Chanukah, we know, is celebrated for 8 days. So it's in the context of, you know, Chanukah that the Maral really develops this idea. Why is Chanukah celebrated for 8 days? Well, because the oil burned for 8 days. Okay, so why did the oil burn for 8 days? Right? Because eight represents the idea of Me'ala Teva, and, you know, the whole celebration of Chanukah is, you know, the celebration of the supernatural, the fact that God acted in a supernatural way. It went beyond nature and the like. Rabbeinu Bechaye might explain the significance of the 8 days of Chanukah in a much different fashion. He might say, no. The fact that Chanukah lasted for 8 days is because Chanukah is primarily a celebration that speaks to the restoration of the Beis HaMikdash. Chanukah is a very Beis HaMikdash-centric holiday. The Beis HaMikdash had been defiled. Now the Beis HaMikdash was being restored. And, you know, the number 8 is particularly significant because it highlights the connection between what happened and the Beis HaMikdash, right? So according to Rabbeinu Bechaye, that number 8 might have significance in that respect when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash as well. When it comes to the notion, when it comes to the holiday of Chanukah as well. Just 1 second. So again, so that's right at the beginning of the parasha. The significance of the number 8, you know, is explained by Rabbeinu Bechaye in two different ways. A, the beginning of a new cycle. B, you know, the notion that there's a particular connection between the number 8 and the Mikdash or Mishkan. Again, for reasons that at least, you know, I don't know exactly what they're all about. I'm sure Rabbeinu Bechaye had a deeper understanding of why the number 8 is that connected with the Mikdash and the Mishkan. But in what sense, I'm not really sure. Wanted to take a look.
The Mishkan was the supernatural connection in this world between us and Hashem.
Yeah. Okay, so you know, if you want to read the Maral into it, you definitely could.
Oh, that's right. That's
could read the Maral. Yeah.
Okay.
Wanted to take a look a little bit further on Perek Yud Pasuk Yud Beis. In Perek Yud, the Perek opens up with the description of how Nadav and Avihu bring their korbanos, bring their ktaras before into the Mishkan, how they're tragically struck down at that time, you know, how they tragically die. And then we find the following. If you look at Perek Yud Pasuk Vav, it says, Vayomer Moshe Aram, Ula Elazar Lisamar Bonov. Moshe says to Aaron and to Elazar and Isamar, Roshechem al Tifro, Uvigdechem lo Tifro, Muvlo Samusu. You have to observe the, you know, you have to continue your kahuna and not observe the laws of Avelus, you should not refrain from cutting your hair. You should not rip your clothing. Right? You should just keep on going. Everyone else should mourn the loss of Nadav and Avihu. Your kohanim, you just have to keep going. Right? He tells them that. Then Pasuk Ches, Vayidaber Hashem al Aaron leimor. Hashem turns to Aaron and he says, I'm telling you a halacha, Yayin v'shechar al teish. You know, whenever you and your sons come into the Ohel Moed, don't drink any wine beforehand. And then Pasuk Yudbeis, Vayidaber Moshe al Aaron ve'Elazar v'Isamar barav hanosarim. Moshe again speaks to Aaron and Elazar and Isamar, and he tells them that you should eat the karbonos which you brought today. Right? Again, don't just keep on going. You know, in other words, don't do anything that will indicate that somehow you're in a state of mourning. Rashi the Rebbeinu B'chai as follows: Ukvar hisker lemalo. Vayomer Moshe al Aaron Elazar l'Isamar bonov. Vayoroishu psukim elu smuchim zelo ze. Ki akol dibur Moshe al Aaron shlei bonov shelo. If you think about it, the theme of the first time Moshe speaks to Aaron and Elazar and Isamar is basically the same theme as when Moshe speaks to Aaron, Elazar and Isamar the second time around. Right? In Pasuk Vav, Moshe speaks to Aaron and his sons and he says, don't be noeg avelus. Right? Just keep on going. Don't rip your clothing. Don't let your hair grow long. Just keep on going. And that's the same idea which he reiterates essentially in Pasuk Yudbeis, right? Eat the karbanos, right? Don't let anything stop you. Don't do anything, you know. Don't refrain from eating any karbanos just because you're avelut. It's basically the same speech that he gives them, just a different application. So yes, the Rabbeinu B'chayi. So how come the Torah interrupts with God speaking to Aaron and telling him the halachos of not drinking? Right, so the truth is, we're not always sensitive to this when we go through the parsha of Shavuot for a very simple reason. Between the parsha of Hashem speaking to Aaron and telling him, you know, that the Kohanim should not drink when they come into the Mishkan, and the next section where you know Moshe goes to Aaron Elazar Nisamar and he says, you know, you should eat the karbanos, don't let anything deter you. So we stop the aliyah, right? There's an aliyah break between those two sections. So, you know, when there's a new aliyah, you know, we forget about everything that happened during the past aliyah. You know, we're so busy concentrating on the Mishnah Berurah and, you know, the fellow's, you know, second cousin and everyone else that he's giving a bracha to, you know, after the aliyah. But the truth is, if you think about it, really, the theme of the earlier section and the theme of the later section is the same. So why is there this interruption of Hashem coming to Aaron and saying, oh, by the way, let me just interrupt for a few moments. Moshe is telling Aaron and his sons about how you should just keep on going. Hashem Ki'ilu pops in the middle of the conversation and says, I want to share some halachas with you. About that, okay. You know, you're not going to tell the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're not going to put the Ribbono Shel Olam on hold, right? But it seems like a strange entry. You know, Moshe is still in the middle of talking to Aaron and Elazar and Isamar about all the things that they should and shouldn't do. Shouldn't that have been continuous? So he says as follows. Mahifzik Beinayim B'parshas Yad V'Sheikha Al Teisht. Kedei lilamin choderech eretz, shechayuv adam lenachem avelim. The reason that there is this interruption where Hashem comes to Aaron and he tells him these halachos about not, you know, that they're not supposed to be drinking wine when they come into the Mishkan, is because Hashem wasn't just simply conveying halachos. Hashem was being menachem avel. Hashem was comforting Aaron and his sons after this terrible tragedy. Ki Aaron hayom es abel kan al shnei bonov nado vaviu. Uba Kadosh Baruch Hu lenachem oso. Aaron was mourning over his two sons, and Kadosh Baruch Hu came to be menachem ovo. Kmo shedarshu chazal b'pasuk vayera ilav levakir es achola. Just as you know, the famous Rashi says at the beginning of the Pashas vayera, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avraham Avinu, why? To be Mevakeh Chola, after Avraham Avinu had done the bris, and he was, you know, under the weather. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him, and, you know, tried to, you know, to cheer him up, so to speak, you know, to make sure that he was doing okay. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revelation to Aaron over here is to be Menachem Avo. V'zeo shetim sadib al Aaron levado v'omro v'idaber Hashem al Aaron leimor. That's why only Aaron is spoken to as opposed to Moshe, because Moshe didn't need Nichum Aveilim at this point. Apparently Aaron is spoken to more so than Elazar and Isamar, who are also Aveilim, because as painful as it is to lose a brother, it's that much more painful to lose a child, right? So, you know, Aaron, of all of the impacted, was the most sabrochen over here, was the most broken up. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Davka interrupted right in the middle of Moshe, you know, conveying all of these instructions to Moshe, Elazar and Isamar, and Hashem said, wait, I just have to get in a few words with Aaron, Yayin v'shefer al teshet. This is a very fascinating account of Rabbeinu B'chaya for a couple of reasons. First of all, technically speaking, the whole point of the earlier and the latter paragraphs is that Aaron and his sons should not fear Avelos. Right? They're not supposed to be acting as Avelim. You know, Aaron is a Kohen Gadol, his sons, who are Nimshechu B'Shem and Amishcha, have the dinim of Kohanim Gadolim, at least with regard to this issue. You know, the whole point was that just keep going weiter. So what's Shaykh Nicham Aveilim? You know, you're not Aveilim. So the Terence says that it's a very beautiful idea, it's a very poignant idea. Halachically, they may not be allowed to be knowing Aveilus, but that doesn't make them feel any better. Right? On a human level, they're still Aveilim, even if on a halachic level, they're prescribed from being Aveilim. And it's the profound sensitivity, you know, which is displayed by the Torah, that even someone who's not allowed to mourn because he's a Kohen Gadol nonetheless deserves Nichum Aveilim, and deserves Nichum Aveilim from no less than the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. In fact, as Rabbeinu B'chaya is going to go on to say, this is actually the source for Nichum Aveilim from the Torah. This is where we find it. So in other words, the source of Nichum Aveilim, the Torah, is an example of a non-halachic Aveilus, right? Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Menachem someone who technically is not an Avel al-Pidin, but nonetheless is suffering on a human level and needs that, you know, that comfort which HaKadosh Baruch Hu can provide. And that's a fascinating insight, but I think it comes out directly from, you know, I think it's, I'm not saying pshat in Rabbeinu B'chaya. I think that is what Rabbeinu B'chaya is saying, that, you know, that Nichum Aveilim can be shayich even when the person is not an Avel in a technical sense of the term.
Wasn't Nadab and Abihu still
in the Right. So in other words, in Right. So again, I don't know how all of those gedarim play out over here. Meaning, you know, we're not supposed to be menachem somebody who's meso mutalafano, because the focus, you know, for the avil is just supposed to be on kvura. Because when the Rambam lists the mitzvah of avelus min haTorah, you know, the Rambam's understanding, there's a big debate in Rishonim, you know, what's the nature of the mitzvah of avelus. The Rambam's understanding is that being knowing avelus for the first day is a din d'araisa, and all the rest of the shiva is a din d'rabbana. Right, okay. But where do we know that there's an idea of avelus being midaraisa even for the first day? So the Rambam says it's learned out from the chiyuv of kohanim to be metama themselves to their relatives in order to take care of their burial. In other words, the Rambam understands that if you're mechuyev to bury somebody, you know, that then brings with it a chiyuv to mourn the person afterwards. So the fact that we're not menachem and avels meso mutalufanov may be not so much necessarily a psychological thing, but just you're distracting him from the task at hand. The task at hand is to make sure that he's going to bury his dead, right? So don't start commiserating with him, because the truth is, you know, right now is a time for action, not a time for commiserating. In this case, however, Aaron and his sons are not allowed to be osik in the kvura. So maybe for that reason, in this particular case, the notion of nichum aveilim, the notion of aveilos to whatever extent there is, you know, comes in right away. Yeah.
Thank you. I was going to say that it's strange that the Lashon, when Hashem talked to Aaron, it's like, in other words, they bring down into that discourse that Hashem talked to Aaron because it was Vayigal Aaron. But at the same time, Hashem is talking in a way like, you better not drink either, or you'll get what they got.
Right.
That's exactly the Lashon that Hashem uses.
Right. So I'll use that to talk about the second very striking thing here, Rabbi Abachayi. Right. So Rabbi Abachayi says that these psukim are essentially psukim of Nichum Aveinu, right? That the Ribbono Shel Olam appears to Aaron, and he's Menachem Avel after Aaron has just lost his sons. And they don't seem like psukim of Nichum Aveinu. They're halachas. And not only are they halachas, but as David, I think, correctly points out, there's a little bit of an implied threat in these halachas. Don't drink wine like they did. And Chazal understands that this teaches us that Nadav and Avihu went into the Mishkan Shtuye Yayin, that they had what to drink before they went into the Mishkan. Don't drink, or you'll get what happened to them. Right? I don't know. I don't find that particularly comforting. You know, that's a little scary, more so than being comforting. How does Rabbi Abachayi see that as Nichum Aveilu? So I think, again, this I'm interpreting a little bit. The first thing I said, I think, is just, you know, kemat beferish of the Rabbi Abachayi, right? That Nichum Aveilu can apply even when the person's not halachically in Aveil, but they're suffering. This, I'm not as sure, but I think this is correct. I think this is implied in what he's saying. That, you know, for a person who's immersed in Torah study and in Yonei Ruchnius, sharing halacha with such a person can be a source of Nichum Aveilu. Now, let me be very careful to define that, because most of the time, that's a very difficult concept to put into practice for a very simple halachic reason. An Avil is not allowed to learn. Right? Kuri Hashem Yeshar Mesam Chaylev, right? And as Torah study, glad is the heart. That's Dafka, one of the things he's not allowed to do during the Shiva period. So, you know, to use halacha as a form of Nichum Aveilim, or to use Limud halacha as a form of Nichum Aveilim, is usually going to be a very difficult thing to do. But remember, in this particular case, Aaron doesn't have the halachas of an Avil. Right? So he's a person who is bereft, but not halachically in Avil. It's a person who's bereaved, but not halachically in Avil. How do you cheer such a person up? So for someone like an Aaron HaKohen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaching him halacha, right, sharing a new halacha with him, is a nechama, is a source of consolation. Right, there's a famous drasha that Rav Soloveitchik gave in 1967. The Rav in 1967 suffered in a couple of months the loss of his mother, his brother, and his wife. Right, all within like 3-4 months of one another. And by the time his wife passed away, time is Esther. You know, so by the time his wife passed away, she was the last of the three. You know, again, it's hard to rank people, but, you know, I think of all of the blows, you know, this was the one that probably hit him the hardest. And he got up later on during the year, and he said publicly, if it wasn't for the fact that I was immersed in, you know, my learning, my shiurim, and everything like that, I got out of my mind. He got up and said this parabit, you know, to suffer those three losses in quick succession like that, the only thing that's keeping me sane is the fact that I'm throwing myself into Torah learning. David HaMelech said it, right? Lulei soros chashashu, I also vanity ba'ani. Were it not for your Torah, my delight, I would be lost, you know, in my affliction, right? So I think that same idea is what's going on over here as well. Aaron HaKohen doesn't have any itzah prohibiting him from learning. The biggest nechama that the Ribbono Shel Olam can therefore give him is to share words of Torah with him. Right? And even with the punishments and even with the implied punishments, okay, but that's all part of the Torah. You know? That's, you know, it's not he didn't take it as a threat. You better do this or else. You see what happened to them.
Because he had no avenue of doing it.
Right. In other words, this is the Ribbono Shel Olam sharing with him. This is an Isser, and this is what happens if you violate the Isser. You know, this is Torah. You know, so for an Aaron HaKohen dealing with his loss, the best way for him to deal with it is not to sit around and schmooze about, you know, the price of tea in China. It's absorbing Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. That's the ultimate Nichum Aveilim that he can experience. Right? So So that I think is a very, very powerful idea. The truth is, you know, within limits, that's applicable even in a more mainstream kind of context. You know, when a person goes to be Menachem Avil, if you're Menachem Avil by someone who's the Talmud Chacham, and you talk in learning to the extent to which you're allowed to, again, you talk about in Yoni Avelus, you know, again, things which are Torah but still permissible for an Avil to be involved in, you oftentimes see that Talmud Chacham will just, it's a pick-me-up, you know, it lights them up, it gets them happy, as much as you're allowed to be happy, right? You know, but it serves as the nechama to him, to be able to talk about Inyanei Torah, because again, for that person, that's his chiyus, that's what keeps him alive. Again, if it's done in a way in which it adheres to the halacha, you know, so it's a very unique way to be Menachem Avil, you know, to really give the person a nechama in a very, very special way. Okay. What's the source for this idea that this is an aspect of Nichum Avelim? So he quotes from a Medrash Koheles. And again, Rabbi Shavel points out, as is often the case, in our version of the Medrash Koheles, the critical lines that Rabbi Bachaya quotes are not there. So Rabbi Bachaya apparently had his own version of the Medrash Koheles, which, you know, the kicker, you know, was not good, his version. But the Medrash Koheles, the way that Rabbi Bachaya has it, goes like this. Three lines from the bottom. Tov l'lechas obey. I'm sorry? He had a different. Yeah. Not a different version of Koheles, but a different version of the Medrash Koheles. The pasuk says in Koheles, better to go to a house of mourning than to a chasana. Better for a person to go, says the Medrash, to an event that impacts on both the living and the dead. You know, if you go to a Beis Avel, so you're helping out the dead, you're helping out those who were left behind. Better to go to that. Rather than going to a wedding which doesn't benefit the dead, it only benefits the living. That much we have in our Medrash Koheles. Then the Medrash says as follows. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Medrash, the way Rabbi Bechai has it, says as follows. Says Hashem, Lamad mimeni, learn from me, Shehinachti simchas bonai b'mishkan, because when the Mishkan was dedicated, it was like a chasana, and says Hashem, I left the chasana, I left the dedication of the Mishkan, v'neglesi la'avel nodav aviyu, and instead I went to be Menachem Avel over the loss of Nadav Avihu. Now what that Medrash is saying is that the Ribbono Shel Olam was Menachem Avel, you know, over the losses of Nadav Avihu. Where did he do that? So says Rabbeinu Bechai, well, I guess that's our pasuk, because we don't find anywhere else that there's any indication whatsoever in the Chumash that Hashem was somehow Menachem Avel by the Misos of Nadav Avihu. So that's where Rabbi Bechai comes on to this idea that, you know, the revelation of the halacha about Yayin v'Sheicher Al Teish is some form of Nichum Avelim. Again, Rabbi Shavel points out that critical line doesn't exist in our version of the Medrash Koheles, which means that, you know, from our perspective, you know, we really don't have a source back in Chazal for saying that there's a Nichum Avelim going on over here. And in fact, Rabbi Bechai says, Aval Razal, the Chachamim themselves, and the Gemara in Sota, they quote in another source for Nichum Avelim. Right? Again, this is the more well-known source. You know that after Avram passes away, Hakadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yitzchak. He gave him a bracha. And their understanding is that the bracha that Hashem gave Yitzchak was that he was Menachem Avel Yitzchak. Right? So that's the more conventional understanding. That's the Gemara in Sota. Rashi quotes it on Chumash, right, that we see over there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Menachem Avel. But says Rabbeinu Bechai, at least according to his version of the Medrash Koheles, there's a different source for the idea of being Menachem Avel in the Torah itself, and that comes from this series of Pesukim. Yeah?
The part about doing something for the people that went nifter to the Shamas, I can see that as being, I can see that very well, because and the Shoma has no Kayach.
Right.
He has no Khir, he has no Kayach. He could just, you know, he, as much as if he's a big tzaddik, he's in a better place, but he just exists. He can't choose, he can't find, he can't work.
Right.
So whatever you can do for a neshama, he says, Zeichan Nishmas.
Right.
It's a very big thing.
Right, it's a tremendous thing. Right, 100%. Let me share one last beautiful thought from Rabbi Nachman. And this is in the parasha of the kosher and treifa animals. In Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Chases, the Torah says, after having gone through the list of the kosher and treifa animals, there are certain types of creatures called sherets, right, these crawly creatures, that are tome, meaning not only, you know, are you not allowed to eat them, but if you touch the carcass of one of these creatures, you become tome, you know, you have to go to the mikvah before you can become tome. What are these creatures? So, you know, the Torah lists off 8, hachole veho achbar vahatsav luminehu, right? Basically, they are reptiles with, you know, one or two, depending on how you translate it, one or two rodents, right? The achbar is a mouse, but basically most of the things that are listed off here are different types of reptiles. These reptiles, when they die, I mean, these are the shrusim, the shmona shrusim, the famous parak and Shabbos that caused tumma. Rashi Rabbeinu Bechaye in Pasuk Lamed, Hachomer v'atin shomes hiskir shmona shrosim v'omer lohem eilat meim lohem. Right, these are the tome creatures whose carcasses bring about tuma. V'hanochosh einun b'chlovin. Isn't it interesting? The snake, it's not tome when it dies. I mean, you can't eat snake, right? I guess people in Texas like to eat rattlesnakes. I don't know, but you know, okay, a snake is a treifa animal in the sense that you're not allowed to eat it, treifa reptile, but it doesn't cause tumas maga. In other words, you touch a snake, it doesn't make you tummy. V'yesh l'sma, was there. You know, it's a funny thing that the snake is not one of the shmona shrasim. Ki roi hoyo b'vadai sh'yenochosh tummy umetame. You would think the snake would be the most obvious candidate for being a tummy reptile. Ki hu shorash hatuma v'hazuama. Because what brought the ultimate tumma into the world? The snake. The snake from the get-go was a tummy creature. Right? I mean, it represents tumma in the sense of evil. Going back to the primordial snake, you know, back in Gan Eden. Wouldn't it have been fitting for the snake to have been, you know, if not avi avos ha-tumma, okay, it's not going to be like a dead body, but at least it should be a tummy like a sheriff. Right. Why isn't the nachash in the list of the shrotzim?
The quintessential.
What's that?
Should have been the quintessential tumor.
Yeah, should have been the quintessential tumor or something, you know. Ha'inyan hu. So the answer is as follows, he says. Michlalei darchei ha-Torah shekol nesiv oseh ha-shalom. Torah is all about peace. Right? Torah is all about trying to bring a sense of comfort and peace into the world. So because of that, the Torah didn't want to render the nachash as an animal which was tameh. Why? Because then no one would kill snakes. Because the minute you killed the snake would be dead, and in all likelihood you'd become tameh. Again, okay, you could shoot the snake, you know, but more likely than not, you've got to touch the dead snake in the process of killing it. And then, in a society where it's very important to stay tahor, right, a society where you have to be tahor, certainly to go into the Beis HaMikdash, to eat karbonos, you know, as we know, the chaverim ate their chulin al taras hakodesh, you know, they ate even regular meat and regular food in a state of tahara. So when anyone sees a snake, they're not going to want to kill it, because they're going to become tameh as a result. And that would be terrible. Why would it be terrible? Because if we can't kill snakes, snakes will kill us. Right? Snakes are dangerous. Right? We want to give people the ability to be able to get these dangerous snakes out of the world. Umizeh hisker kol holech al gochon
shehu nachash v'holecha l'arba shehu akrov umar beraglayim v'hu sheshmo nado. Right, if you look a little bit further on in pasuk mem beis in the same parak, the pasuk says kol holecha al-gochon, anything which crawls on its belly, which is the snake, kol holecha l'arba, anything which walks on four, which he says is the scorpion, ad komar beraglayim, until anything that has many feet, which I don't know if he means the centipede, because we're going to see he's going to describe something which is poisonous. Centipedes are not poisonous, right? So there's some kind of lizard that's poisonous that has many feet. I'm not sure exactly. All three of these items of these reptiles, or not reptiles, all three of these creatures are things that have poison and can kill people. V'yeshbohem machlios, v'yeshem mamisos. They could make you sick, they could kill you. V'hiskir bohem, and with regard to all of the Torah says, lo sochlum ki sheketzheim. They are disgusting, so don't eat them. Don't eat them, but you can touch them. You can touch them after they're dead. There's no tumah that pertains to snakes and scorpions or any other kind of, you know, dangerous animal. Lo asar ki im ha'achila aval tir es hamago. The Torah intentionally did not create a category of tumah sheretz for these types of creatures, because the Torah wants to make it easy for us to kill threatening creatures. It doesn't want us to hesitate because we're going to become tameh in the process. Ma'ashein kein b'shmona shrafsim shein b'lohem eres kla. When you think about the shmona shrafsim, the ones that do have tumah, all of these, right, all of these lizards are, you know, or the achbar are things which are not really dangerous. I mean, mice are annoying, right? But, you know, they're not really dangerous.
You do want to kill them.
What's that?
You do want to kill them.
Right, right. You know, the koach, the lato'a, you know, these are all different types of reptiles, you know? So they're not poisonous reptiles. So that's why the Torah can assign to them the din of tumas sheretz. No one's going to refrain. You know, we're not worried. That someone won't kill them. Okay, so you won't kill them. Also, it won't be so terrible if you don't kill these lizards. But if you won't kill snakes, if you won't kill scorpions, so you're going to make the world a difficult place to live in. So the Torah, in its rachmanus, allows us, you know, removes the din of tumah sheretz from the nachash, even though you would have thought that is the ultimate candidate for tumah sheretz. Let me just add one thought to this Rabbeinu Bachai. It's a very, very beautiful thought. If you look at the pasuk that he quoted before, the pasuk mem beis, kol holech al gachon, so the Mesorah tells us that the word gachon, right, that the word gachon has a large vav in it, right, and that vav is the halfway point of the letters in the Torah. That's what the Mesorah writes. Vav to gachon chatsi hatar ba'osios v'havav rabosi. It's printed in the Chumash. Now the truth is, if you count it up, it's not quite the middle of the Torah, but that's a separate issue. Right? The Mesorah identifies the vav as being the midpoint of the letters in the Torah, and it's big. Isn't it striking? Now remember, the Rebbeinu Bachai said that kol holech al gachon means the snake, right? That crawls on its belly, and the pasuk is telling us you can't eat snakes, but you can touch dead snakes, because why can you touch dead snakes? Because otherwise you wouldn't have an incentive to kill them. What's the basis for that? The Torah wants to enable us to allow peace to come into the world. The middle of the Torah is that lesson, right? The midpoint of the Torah, you know what? You know, right smack in the middle is that idea of shalom. That the Torah was metaher the nachash in order to bring shalom into the world, right? So again, however you answer the question, that it's not really the midpoint of the Torah when you add up the letters. The fact that it's identified by the Mesorah as being the midpoint of the Torah maybe is meant in a more, you know, homiletic sense than a literal sense. The idea of shalom is the midpoint of the Torah itself. The vav, you know, which of gachon, of the nachash, you know, is the midpoint of the Torah, because shalom is at the middle, is at the center of everything that we do. Okay, wish everybody a good Shabbos, and we'll pick up next week with the next parasha.